Hello and welcome to another episode of the Watermill Theatre podcast. I'm Danielle Pearson and I'm the playwright in residence here at the Watermill. If you've listened to the last episode, you'll have heard all about my new version of Jane Eyre, which is currently touring to schools and village halls. We know that many of you will be studying drama and English, so in this episode, we take you behind the scenes on our production and explore the process of making a show from page through to stage. And stick around for advice and tips on how to get into the jobs we love in theatre.
Little Sally Water, sprinkle in the saucer. Rise, Sally, rise and dry your eyes. Sally, turn to the east. Sally, turn to the west. Sally, turn to the very one who loves you best.
First up, here I am talking to our producer Imogen Greenberg about how I got involved in this project. So a playwright's career is really exciting and varied. You spend a lot of time having meetings, talking about potential plays, sort of working towards getting commissioned by theatres. When an idea comes, it could be that you've had an idea for a script or written a script and you then pitch that to a theatre, or it might be that a theatre has an idea that they need a writer to work on and then they come to you. With Jane Eyre, the Watermill has a schools tour every year. So in this case, Paul came to me and suggested Jane Eyre and was interested to hear my thoughts about the book and what it might be that I'd be really interested to pursue. So we had some chats early on about Bertha and a kind of modern feminist reading of the book. My instinct was that I would like to keep it in the 19th century. So you have kind of thematic chats early on about that kind of thing. Chloe France came on board as director, and then we had lots of chats along those lines as well. Then it was up to me to go away and try and write a first draft. Then for a few months after the first draft, you kind of work with the director to try and solve dramaturgical questions you might have, rewrites, notes. We also had an R&D period here at the Watermill, so we get to stage the play for a week with actors to kind of see it on its feet and see what needed rewriting and rethinking. As a writer, you're also present for the casting of the play and you can come into rehearsals, although at that stage it's more become the director's remit to work on the show, so your hard work is already done.
I'm Chloe and I'm the director. So a director in theatre is a person who is the centre of all the different voices and helps everyone communicate towards making something coherent. They're the person that first encounters and starts to unpack a story and then gets other people on board, like a designer, often early on, to help them realise that vision with them. So they're not this lone wolf, but in a sense they are, because other people have distinct roles and the director kind of has to come to each of those people and do each of those people's roles with them for a bit to make sure it's feeding this whole artistic vision. So on a day that's just an average day in a director's life, there's probably about 60% of the year where the director isn't in the rehearsal room. I suppose it depends on what age you are and what stage you're at of your career, but there's definitely a significant amount of time. And then you could just be doing loads of emails and loads of preparing yourself for a job or getting jobs.
Sally, turn to the east. Sally, turn to the west. Sally, turn to the very one who loves you best.
So Chloe and I worked together to get a rehearsal draft script ready. Now all we needed was actors. That's where casting comes in.
My name is Matt. I'm the casting and producing assistant at the Watermill. So when we're casting a production, I will set up the auditions, so I'll check the actors' availabilities and book them in. And then on the day, myself and the director, and occasionally the writer, will attend the auditions, and we'll see between kind of 10 to 20 people in a day for various parts. So for this production, it was a three-hander, so we needed actors to be skilled at multi-rolling, because, well, Jane, the actress playing Jane, would be playing one part, but the other two actors would be playing a whole range of different parts. So they needed to be experienced with that. As it's a classic text, some experience with similar parts was useful. For the part of Bertha, we were looking for someone with musical ability. So we saw people who played a range of instruments and had great singing voices and could kind of bring an experimental sort of musical ability to the rehearsal room and work with the director on that side of things. Sometimes someone will just walk into the room and just take the role and make it their own and you'll know there and then. Other times it's useful for the director to have follow-up chats with them about how they see the production, what ideas they could bring to the role. So in this case, Chloe did have a chat with the actors afterwards following the auditions and really kind of dug down into what they thought of the text and what ideas they could bring to it, and that was really useful.
I must beg of you to come here, Miss Governess. Make haste to the hall now. Who can say what ghosts and goblins linger in these dark woods?
Once we'd cast the show, it was back to Chloe, who runs the rehearsal room of actors, to work with a creative and production team to bring the show together.
When you're actually in rehearsal, it can vary hugely. So that 40% of the year you're in a rehearsal room, in the first weeks, early weeks of rehearsal, might be about giving the actors as much information about the whole world of the play. So looking at the text really closely, giving them information about the historical context. And I think the best directors always enable the actors to discover stuff for themselves, but they set up boundaries for that to happen within. So you might be able to ask them to do their own research tasks about the historical context and then come and share it with everyone, because nothing useful comes of you just standing there and giving them a lecture. And then as the rehearsal process moves on and you're staging scenes, you might be looking at, okay, when there's a life for this and the actors have to move around in the space, what's interesting for them to do? And I think it's a bit of a fallacy to think directors sit with a massive book and a big pencil or big stick and shout and tell actors where to stand. That was true in like the 1950s, but really quality, interesting directing that makes good work comes from making your actors as informed as possible about their characters, about the relationships between characters, about the context of the play, about the narrative. And then you let them make decisions about where they go and stand and what the pictures are and what it looks like and how they say something. And you just keep asking them questions to get the most specific results. And as it moves on, you'll want to be mindful of the needs of stage management, production. So in terms of like sound and lighting design, you'll have meetings about that. You'll all move towards putting it into a theatre and having a week or a couple of days where you tech the play and you are making sure that from the rehearsal room, where you got everything going with the actors, you then introduce set, costume, sound, light, and that that's all coherent and that makes sense, and you put it into a theatre space or into any space where you're performing it, because that could be a field or a tent. But you tech it in the space that you're going to then do it in front of an audience in. And then the audience come, and you might rehearse a little bit in the early shows and do stuff to refine things. And if the audience didn't understand stuff or found things funny or not funny, you might go and do rehearsal and note the actors in between each show for maybe a week. And then you move to a point in professional productions often called press night. And that's kind of fun and scary and sad, because after that you leave. And it's the weird bit where a lot of people come and judge it. And it can feel kind of like, oh, this is happening and it's business. But it's a part of the process. And then you leave and the actors, if you've done a good job, keep finding ways to make new choices every night and grow into their roles and have fun with each other. And you might come back and visit the show, or your assistant might, and tell you how it's doing. And for as long as the show goes on, you'll be in some way connected to it. But you might be moving on to other projects and preparing or rehearsing other things while that show is performing that you've just done.
I go out early to walk on the moors or late in the evening to try and tire myself out. Sometimes I'd meet with St. John on the road and we'd walk for a way together. Even with his strange, stern manner, I was glad of the company.
The show wouldn't be possible without the production team. On Jane Eyre, Tim Knight was the sound designer, working in a creative role alongside Chloe. But in his day-to-day job, he's also a member of the Watermill's technical team. Here's Tim.
The start of the process is finding out that I'm going to do the sound design. And once that's happened, you start having conversations with the director, Chloe, and the technical manager, Lawrence, both to find out what's expected on the tour in terms of the size of the sound and the impact it's supposed to have and how quickly they need to be able to set it up and take it down. And then you start having creative discussions with the director. Now, Chloe had a lot of ideas right from the start, which was great. So our conversations were very, very involved. And she had this vision. It changed over time as we discussed it. But right from the beginning, she had a very, very strong vision of how she wanted the sound used in the piece, which made my life a whole lot easier because it gave me a very good focus. So my day-to-day work is a theatre technician at the Watermill Theatre. This involves a large range of things. Essentially, as a theatre technician, I get involved in the sound, the light, and the set, the stage. Day-to-day changes regularly, but every day when the show is up, we will go in and do a rig check. So we will make sure that the sound is turned on and working and all the speakers are functioning as they should be, and that the computers with the sound on, the QLab, are talking to the mixing desk and they're talking to the amps, etc. We will check the lights, we'll make sure they're all turned on, the desk is on, the dimmers are on, and again, that no bulbs are blowing, that all the lamps come on as they're supposed to, and the movers move as they're supposed to, so they focus in the right parts of the stage. We'll also check any video, any projectors, see if they're in the show as well, and just generally make sure that the show is ready from a technical perspective. When it comes to other stuff that we do during the day, I will end up doing various repairs. That could be for the show that is currently on. So we'll get a show report each morning from the night before telling us how the show went. And on a show report, maybe something like the downstage right door, the door handle has come off. Can you please fix? And so we'll go in, we'll fix the door handle on the downstage right door so that it's ready for the next show. Or it could be repairing microphone cables or speaker cables, depending on what's needed each day.
Stage management make everything happen in a production, from getting actors in the right place at the right time to finding props and acting as the bridge between the director's rehearsal room and the rest of the theatre. Here's Kerry, the company stage manager at the Watermill, and Fionn, the deputy stage manager on Jane Eyre, on what their jobs entail.
A company stage manager combines two roles. So it's initially a stage manager and then a company manager. And here we combine those two into one. So you become a company stage manager. So essentially the company element of it is looking after the company, pastorally looking after them, making sure that they know what their calls are. If there's any additional calls that need to be facilitated, I kind of liaise with them from creative to actor. And then the stage manager part of my title is kind of facilitating everything that happens on stage and overseeing the health and safety of that, making sure it all runs smoothly. I'm the lead person that they might go to if there was a problem. So when we're in the theatre, I run the tech, kind of being the bridge between the acting company and the creative company, working out the logistics of how things can happen. And then I hand that over to the stage management team and I go back into rehearsals and I start looking after the company that are in rehearsals and back to the beginning.
So my name is Fionn. I'm the deputy stage manager for Jane Eyre, or DSM for short. Basically my job is I'm in rehearsals, I'm the middleman between the rehearsal room and the production team. So I sit in rehearsals and take blocking notes. So when the director is blocking the cast, I make notes of where they stand and where they move and what props they're holding and where the props move to, etc. At the end of the day, I create a rehearsal report. So if we have any requests for new sound effects or new props, etc., I just write that down into a document and send that out to the rest of the team. And then once we get into shows, I do what's called calling the show. So I will call the LX cues and sound cues and tell them when to go. And once we're on tour as well, I'll be in charge of managing the get-ins and get-outs.
Because Fionn is the deputy stage manager, she's in rehearsals and she's taking down all the notation and keeping an eye on and taking rehearsal notes. And that comes back to us in the office where we will pull together the props that might be needed for that show. Also just overseeing the schedule of everything, so making sure that, you know, Fionn's keeping the actors to a 43-hour week contract, and I'm her point of contact for the rehearsal and for the Watermill.
Sally turned to the east, Sally turned to the west, Sally turned to the very one who loves you best.
As you've heard, there's a huge range of jobs you can do in theatre. But how do you get into them? Well, we asked everyone involved to tell us a bit about how they found their way into their jobs and to offer up any advice they have for people looking to get into a career in theatre. There's no one way to become a playwright. People come at it from all angles. For me, I studied English literature and I initially used to write prose, so I came to it from a slightly more literary angle, I suppose. But there are also loads of brilliant playwrights who are actors or directors or any other role in theatre where they've kind of learned on the job what works and what doesn't on stage. Some really useful schemes are out there which can help you when you're in the early stages of your career. The Royal Court, the Orange Tree, lots of different theatres have really good young writers programmes which you can do. But general advice is write as much as you can, read as much as you can, see as much theatre as you can.
So I think there's an idea that you have to want to be a director from early on and you have to do an English degree to direct. Neither of those things are true. I had thought I wanted to do work in theatre, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I did a history degree. I wanted to do something that allowed me to have a role in every part of the process. And that's what appealed to me about directing. So I found that whilst I was at my undergrad university and I left. And I did a directing MA at Birkbeck, which is in London. It's part of the University of London. And it's a 2-year directing MA. There's no reason that you have to train to be a director. There's tons of things you can do to assist or be at a theatre on a placement for a year or do a scheme for 9 months being attached to a theatre where you can do like learning as a director. You don't need to necessarily do an MA at all. Also, you make work and get experience like that. But I did it because it was useful to be able to learn a little bit like the tools of directing, like actors learn at drama school. And after that, I used the connections that I had made there because I spent the second year of it working at the Watermill and I was the resident assistant director here. And I met tons of directors to work with and people who could give me jobs, and I tried to use those connections as much as possible when I left. So my advice would be to make work in any way possible. So if that's on a small scale at university or at school where you're doing it with your friends, or you're trying to take something to Edinburgh for fun, if you're doing it for fun, just go for a week, don't go for a month because you'll hate it and lose loads of money. So make work and learn through making work which bit of the process you actually like. Is it the directing? And what kind of stories do you want to tell? And then look around you and think what stories are not being told and I think should be. And look at yourself as a person and think, what can I tell? What do I, as a person, have to say to the world that isn't being said? And then go and watch tons of theatre. Write to people whose shows you like, the writers, the directors. Thank them and say, well done. And just ask them for coffee. Don't ask for anything else. And see what happens.
So I studied English and creative writing at university and then producing film and television. So for my master's in producing film and TV, I did a lot of producing my own projects. So that involved casting, which kind of I was really interested in. It's a really satisfying feeling when you find the right person for the job, when they walk into the room and you know they can do it and then they do nail it and you can see the look on the director's face and you know that they're going to be perfect for the part. That's a really rewarding part of casting. If I was giving advice to someone who wanted to go into casting, I would say go and see as many productions as you can and read as many scripts as you can.
My formal training was in Manchester at the Northern Ballet School. I am actually a dancer by training and worked 9 years professionally doing that. Along the way, I realised that I was interested in all the technical stuff that happened around me while I was on stage performing. And I was always asking questions and helping move things when appropriate and so on. So when it was time for me to stop dancing and move on, going backstage was quite a natural progression. And I've actually learned most of my stuff just by being around doing, asking questions of people who know better than me and getting on and doing it, really. So for anybody who's wanting to go into the technical side of theatre, I would say it's something you need to do, you need to try. It's a very enjoyable life, but it's a very different life to working in an office or being a teacher. You work all sorts of hours, but you're often with a very good team. So it's incredibly rewarding, but I would get in touch with the local theatre, see if you can start working as a casual, get some work experience in there, depending where you are along the way and how much you have. Maybe start with your Amdram group backstage. And if you decide that actually you really do enjoy the technical side of theatre, you have two options. You can either go off to technical school after technical college and do a technical theatre course, which many people do, but I also worked alongside many people who have just learned the trade by doing it along the way. And so it very much depends who you are, what type of person you are, and how you best learn, which one's best for you.
So for me, I started off on stage. I was training in musical theatre And then I was in the middle of auditioning to do my BA in musical theatre. And I just had a moment where I was like, I don't think I really enjoy this very much. And I was kind of, you know, wasn't sure where it would lead in the future. So I had a chat with one of my lecturers and explained, I don't think I want to be on stage anymore, but I still really love theatre. So she suggested that I go into stage management. So she kind of explained what that was a little bit more. And then I started volunteering in local theatres. And then I applied later that year for Welsh College and managed to get in. And then, yeah, went from there then. I would say, I think the best start is to kind of see what is around you in your local area and how much you can kind of volunteer in your local theatres. I think that helped me a lot. Yeah, just volunteer and just get into it. And then, like, there's also National Youth Theatre and stuff when you get to 16, I think. So I definitely recommend doing something like that, because for me, again, that was a start that kind of gave me a bit of experience in touring. And instead of going from, you know, volunteering with amateur productions, it kind of taught me then, okay, now this is how people sort of do it professionally. And then even further down the line, I would recommend getting some form of training, whether that's in a university or a drama school. It just helps a lot.
I guess, as most people, I probably come from most stage managers probably come from a performance side first, as because they don't do stage management courses when you're five, but they do ballet courses when you're, you know, ballet class and when you're five. So I guess I was always interested in the arts. I never wanted to go into the arts at all. And then I went to see Les Mis and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I want to do this as my career, be on stage, that is. And my very brutal but very brilliant ballet teacher said to me, Kerry, I think you'd be really great as a stage manager, which obviously was heartbreaking at the time. But she kind of described what it was to be a stage manager. And I was like, oh, I guess that does sound quite cool. The control freak in me, you know, the idea of managing all these things, all these people. I was like, yeah, great. So I really randomly just called Guildford School of Acting one day and I said, are you still taking for your technical course? And they were. And I went and I interviewed and I got in. So I went. I thought, look, I've got nothing else to do, so, you know, let's do this. And as soon as I got to GSA, I just had the best 2 years of my life. It was great and everything that I kind of wanted. The security of working backstage and not kind of being down to how you look or, I don't know, luck, I guess. I feel like I'm more able to carve the career that I want to have rather than it just being if you get lucky. The idea of that just terrified me. So that's how I got into stage management. It depends who you are, and I think it depends where you're coming from. I didn't really know that I wanted to do this. And I think people can have different experiences at drama school. I feel very fortunate that I had a brilliant time and I found the course that fitted for me, but I'm not sure it suits everybody. And also now, of course, it's quite expensive. So we've been funded by Andrew Lloyd Webber to run a trainee scheme here. And so we offer somebody that's just out of, you know, A-level sort of age to come and do a year, and they learn 3 months on production, 3 months on stage management, a bit of wardrobe, and then they can choose where they want to, which department they want to land in. So we do on the job training at the Watermill, which I think is a great way to learn, but I think it doesn't suit everybody. So having any kind of drama school behind you is always really helpful. To have the contacts that a drama school gives you is always really helpful, but it's not for everybody. And as long as you can kind of push your way to where you want to be, I think it's your journey, and how you get there has to be how you want to get there.
No, I am poor. Plain, obscure, and little.
I am no bird, and no net ensnares me.
It's you, you rare, unearthly thing.
Master?
How is he my master?
How is he my master?
If he struck me with that rod, I would get it from his hand and break it under his nose.
Were it put free?
It was sure cloud high.
That's it for another episode of the Watermill Podcast. To find out more about the Watermill and its productions, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, or check out our website. This podcast was presented by me, Danielle Pearson, and produced and edited by Imogen Greenberg. We'll be back with more Watermill stories soon, so make sure you subscribe wherever you get this podcast from.